Okay, sorry for the slight delay. So please give a big hand to Dash, who's going to do the next talk about service location protocol, denial of service amplification attacks. And yeah, he has a co-speaker, as you can see, Giraffe. So it's a stand-in, but he'll explain that himself. So big hand for Dash.
Yeah, hello. Thanks. Nice to be here. I'm here for the service location protocol DOS amplification attacks. Maybe you have heard or read about it. If not, well, I will talk about it now. Who are we? Normally, this is a two guys talk, actually, Cryptor, who is not here today. So I brought me Geraffel from the Geraffel Village. Thank you very much. Geraffel! Cryptor is not here for today, but me, which is Dash. Short profiling, so Cryptor is working at BitSight, and he is, quite in network protocols and all kinds of security, also hardware. You can reach him at Twitter, at Cryptor, or Xing, or Umlein at ProtonMail, and myself, Dash, I'm also interested in network protocols and some other things of security. I'm working at CureSec and also Lubret trainings. And my Twitter handle is user2root. Disclaimer, as he is working at BitSight and I'm working at CureSec, we decided to make a joint research. So this research was done by two companies, BitSight, which is located in the US, and CureSec, which is located in Germany. Of course, I do not encourage you to do any sorts of illegal DOS attacks or whatsoever. However, if you want to research those things, which have to be researched, and you must do, and if you want to do it in the internet, please be very calm with that, in the sense of there are also other devices on your way. So you have other routers, switches whatsoever on your path. If you're, for instance, researching one certain vulnerability, it might even affect another device in between. So be very cautious with that. And I'm not do work in the DOS field. So I'm not in DOS defenses or something like this, which does exist nowadays. I've learned a little bit from those guys who do that professionally. But also I'm not very, I wasn't interested in DOS stuff. It seems like, that these things came now to me, also with another work. But we are talking today about the SLP thingy. So, table of contents. In the description for this talk today, I also was thinking first of doing an introduction on DOS, but then I recognized that the talk would be much too long. So if you have time afterwards and you are interested in some other things in regard of that, you can ask me. Also, I know that there was another guy also talking about DOS basics here, so maybe you also want to watch his talk. He's talking about it. So we are focusing here on what SLP is, how the attack work, what else you can do, and that's basically it. So what is SLP? SLP stands for Service Location Protocol. We are skimming a bit through the specification, then how much devices are there, and what the services are. First things first, it was defined in the end of the 90s, so it's now more than, 25, 26 years old. It has a well-defined port, which is 427, listening on UDP and TCP. There are two versions, there's version 1 and version 2. However, version 1, at least in the internet, is not... is in small numbers only there, so we focused on version 2, or we focus here now on version 2. SLP itself is for me something like an, you can think of it as an address book for devices in the internet. not in the internet actually, but as an address book, and I tried for myself to understand it a bit more, or its purpose, to compare it a little bit like an Active Directory MDNS service like this. So, but we will talk about different attributes later. And saying, or talking about the internet, it states already in the RFC, which is the last bullet point, probably not a good idea to be available on the internet. The service location protocol provides a dynamic configuration mechanism for application in local area networks. So the thing is, it's not even possible or hard to do a real address book for the internet, right? I mean, we are trying this with DNS already, and so this was always intended to be internally. SLP itself has like three major services. One is the UA, the user agent, which is usually looking for a service. And then there's the service agent, which should be a device which is announcing itself, or one or more services. And then there's the directory agent, which should like taking this information and spreading it later. However, those things have been mixed up a bit, and so I took this note also from Wikipedia, which also did reflect our experience, which says, today most implementations are daemons that can act as both a user and a service agent, and they also can be configured as a DA, which is a directory agent. So this would be the normal communication flow as it had been intended by the RFCs. Right, so we support multicast and unicasts, and you can talk to a service agent, to a directory agent, and one of them should give you back information, and the other one stores it. And when we started to investigate it, we figured it's much too complicated and made for several devices. We also found no sense. So what we did were thinking of it much more simplified and saying, okay, look, we have a user agent, which is the client or the attacker, and then we have a service which speaks SLP, which is vulnerable, and those who are, which are not, or which we can use for this sort of attack. Yeah, to make it simple. The headers. So this is version 2 only. It has several opcodes. You can see everyone who has ever seen IP, UDP, TCP, whatsoever ICMP protocol header, can read it easily. We have the version, the operation code, the length, and so on and so on. For the attack itself, actually several operations are interesting. The four shown here are actually just an example. There is even another one, actually two others, which are interesting for this. We are focusing on service type request and service type reply, which is the opcode 9 and 10. It's a little bit more down there. The reason for this is obvious. It is a request and a response. However, to make things special, and this is why SLP in this whole amplification thing is a bit more special, is that we have opcode which is called a service registration and also deregistration, but this is another topic as well. So keep those in mind. How much is it spread? Well, obviously, I said it already, it should be only in local area networks, but as it happened to be, it is in a lot of other places as well, notably in the internet. And this is most probably because, well, people just place their devices there and the service is enabled, although most people probably don't even know about it. Just a short question, who know? Before this talk, before 10 minutes ago, that SLP exists. I would say it's 5 people around, like maybe, don't know how many people sitting here, but it's not the most people. Yeah, right. I understand that. So it's that's the interesting thing about SLP. It's there. It seems not really to be used anymore. It never kicked really off, but it's still in the internet. Okay. How much devices? In February we had around 50K. Then this random ransomware group came and exploited a heap exploit in SLP. This is when most people just recognized, whoop, there's a service with a 1 or 2 year old bug I have forgotten to patch or to disable the other service. And this was also a good time, you thought, now to publish this other vulnerability. Then in May, we did a first time presentation of this at Berlin Sites. Hey, Berlin Sites! And there it was still 39,000 SLP speaking devices, UDP. Service listening in the internet, and then in August, when I checked last time, 3,000 less. So, just because they're speaking SLP doesn't necessarily mean they are also vulnerable, at least not for the priming part of the attack. This is a map of all the devices, entities we identified over the world which are affected by this. As you can, I don't know if you can read it, most probably not, but it's basically all sorts of industries you can imagine. And what you can not see is that, for instance, in South America, there's a lot not identified, also not in India. But like the most impacted is, of course, North America, Europe, parts of South and parts of Asia. Some things about the devices and services itself. We gathered more than 600 different fingerprints. I will show you in a second what I'm referring to, a fingerprint in that regard right now. And most of the things, so the most count have been VMware, ESXi, but there were also printers. Yeah, something happened, huh? No, great. Thank you. Okay. So VMware EXI is one of the most, really most devices, stands out completely. And then there is a lot of printer stuff, some strange devices you've never seen, some quite old routers from Taiwan, which is Planex. And then a lot of IPMI devices, so like Supermicro, Lenovo, IBM. And then there had been one device which was quite interesting for me. I just investigated it for some hours, which was very funny. Maybe one of you guys is interested in as well to research it. It's a Broadcom LSI RAID controller, which can be reached. And that's not a lot. I think maybe 100, maybe 200, I'm not sure, in the internet. But, well, you get RAID access. So, funny thing. Identification only with the SLP answers is not always that easy. So, of course, we try to support our identification with other services running, obviously like web servers or maybe SSH, whatever was in there, and to be quickly able to identify some things. What you can see here is the fingerprint I was talking about. This is a classic answer from a response from the SLP protocol. As you can see, place one is VMware infrastructure. Then we have VMware infrastructure VBAM, WBAM. And, I don't recall what the third thing was. IPMI is obvious. Then we had the Konica Minolta. The VLAN app or WLAN app was, if I remember correctly, the Planex routers. And yeah, we have some Lenovo stuff. On the left side, you see the different versions of the ESXi. There's two things. The first thing is for identification. SLP is awesome because there's another operation, which is an attribute request. And with this one, you can even fingerprint pretty nicely the device. In the case of ESXi, it gives you the version number and I think some internal MAC addresses and alike. In regard of other devices, it's other information. Sometimes you get like this amount of data. No, that's the wrong direction. let's go here. So, some screenshots just of devices which were running SLP. For everyone who of you ever managed a server, dedicated server, or had for what reason ever access to IPMI interfaces, knows that that's a Supermicro. Then it's basically the same, just another vendor. The same. This one was Sony for a second because, of course, obviously you recognize it's pretty similar. And then it hit me, yeah, right. Lenovo took over IBM and they just rebranded it. And then ES6i. So, this whole talk is about a vulnerability. And now I start with the vulnerability. At the end, every SLP implementation running UDP is vulnerable, of course. Why is that? Because we know UDP allows us, without any sort of handshake in before, to reach the application layer, right? And quite in difference, if you think about TCP, TCP will never do that, as long as you're not able to guess sequence random numbers, or you have a broken random number generator, or another one of the awesome bugs which do exist, but basically for TCP you need a three-way handshake, and UDP does not, so we're always reaching the application. This means, as we can set our headers, we can also change our source addresses, which is in the IP layer, so we can spoof, so we have reflection. Now, if the response I trigger through the reflection is bigger as my request, I have an amplification. SLP also supports UDP. We get bigger replies than our requests are, so we have a reflected denial of service amplification attack. As this is a known issue for basically since existing, people discuss and try to figure that out, how this is working, and there's how to prevent and check out which networks still support source IP spoofing. There is this organization, CAIDA, which is checking for this, and this is also where this picture has been taken from, so you can see that there is still a percentage of networks where you can send from spoof packets. So I don't know if any of you guys have ever tried to send a spoof packet, but if you do, you might sooner or later recognize that either the packet is not reaching your target, or, well, it shows your IP address in there. So this is because providers started to change. We're looking out for that stuff. So if you're interested in that and which networks do and which not, you can check at CAIDA. There is, of course, a discussion why networks still allow that. I won't go into that discussion, just for your information. The reflection itself. So I said we talk about a service type request. You can see again the header and the packet length. The packet length. This is just without priming. So priming is the term what I learned from those DOS guys which are defending actively things. They said, so what you're doing there, like loading up the SLP directory agent, we call priming. So this is why I say this is without priming. This is a normal request which has like 29 bytes. And it's just asking for the services the device has. And then you get a reply. Which is 67 bytes, so we have an amplification, not a big one, but exists, but it exists. You can also see again the answer is down there. You see the service type list length, that's a second from below, which is 47 bytes, and you see that it is VMware infrastructure again, right? So you also can imagine, just for the basics of amplification, let's go back some slides. Right, even the bigger already the response would be here on this page where what we call fingerprints, there even a simple amplification would be possible. Yeah, This is a picture which shall describe the whole process again. So we have the attacker, which is on the left side, which is doing the service type request and says like, yeah, I'm some, this looks like a Google DNS or something like this, and sends it to the reflector. The reflector is the device down there in the middle, and the reflector gets that and responses to this other service. That's just a classic amplification, like you can also find it in other protocols like DNS, NTP, Memcached, SNMP, and so on and so on. Now, is there space for more? Is there room for more? Yes. This should be a video, but as this is not my device, because of the technical issues, there's no video, but I think the picture explains it anyway. So what is the SLP amplification thingy? There is the arbitrary service registration. As you recall, there's the opcode number 3 from the protocol, and this is a special thing, because what you can do now is you can remotely register another service. Yes, yes. This is like the Picard face palm here. Nice. Why are you doing that? So what this means is, what does this mean? This means we can add another URLs. This would be also funny if any device is really working with this SLP daemon. But for us, for this sort of attack, this is also funny because it means we can put a lot of new data in, and this data is later reflected. There is actually also some crypto things in there, but and sort of authentication, but we have not really found it. So our major impression was that SLP is sort of abandoned, sort of. I mean, there was, if I recall correctly, since 2013, no additional development in the OpenSLP services, at least. Obviously, VMware had to create some patches for the heap overflows they introduced, but well, that's it. So, conclusion, long story short, in practice, everyone and his dog, or giraffe, everyone and his giraffe can add extra services. How we do that? Now, here you can see the service registration header and Wireshark extract of it. The blue background thing shows you the new registered service. As you can see, this is a classic scheme. In that case, it's just SLP load test, and then we have two dots, slash slash, name, a port, and then just some random data. And this is what you can do as long as the directory service or the the SLP service is taking the data, you just can put it in there. So, we put that thing together, right? We have this address thing we can, we have this service registration thing we can do, plus we can define for how long it has to be in there, so you can even say, okay, I just want this information to be there for like 1 hour, and then it's gone, and here we go. Now, this is why SLP is special. Everything I said in the last 5 minutes in one slide. Before we start with the reflection, we load up our reflector. We add services, 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 services. As soon as it's full, or as soon as I know I cannot fill up any more data, because what we figured is that although we had services which had like space for up to 65,535 bytes of maximum data, so 16 bits, bytes, but 16-bit field, so we also figured that some devices, especially also VMware, were stopping at certain levels. So if you tried to add more data than, let's say, 1K, so 10,000 bytes, it was like, yeah, okay, I don't do that right now anymore, and was just sending back 4,000 bytes. So you also have to check a little bit out when you do the priming, what sort of device you are priming. So after you have primed and added some extra data, you just do the classic reflection thing. And in this particular case, we raised the possible amplification factor from 12 to 2,230, which is already quite big. Actually, it is next to Memcached, if I'm informed correctly, one of the biggest amplification thingies possible right now. And also next to that, there are still devices in the internet available. Here could be another video. Yeah. This is a picture explaining how much traffic, for instance, with I think this is one threaded only, could be possible with abusing several devices, and that there is indeed some amplification potential. Yeah, the disclosure thing, responsible disclosure is always fun. I guess everyone who ever tried it knows that it is. as there were a lot of products involved, we thought, okay, it would be nice to go with someone who's taking care of most of this stuff. In this case, it was CISAR, which is, if you don't know, an organization in the States. I think it's CISAR.gov, and they took care of informing the vendors. And yeah, that's what they did. So 1,700 vendors had been informed. There were several discussions with VMware to explain what was going on about the about those issues. And there had a lot of meetings with CISAR. Yes, and then, as you know, in the process of disclosure, you have a date when things are published. And short before the thing had to be published, Crypto reached out also to some other friends of him who are working in this field and is like, look, guys, we are publishing now this SLP thing. You know about that, right? No, they did not knew, which was pretty funny. So they were they're quite surprised. So also have we been, because we assumed that CISAR took care of it, sort of, so the coordination. So we ended up in some funny chats with interesting guys doing this DOS defencing stuff. And yeah, and from there we also had we were discussing and also sometimes monitoring the things together. So the active monitoring after the publication, nothing happened. The write-up was a funny picture we saw in that correlation, like, okay, nothing is moving here, so let's go on. Actually, then something happened. What you can see here is, we have, again, a world map with some red dots on it. The red dots are the systems which had been primed by someone, and the green dots, obviously, which not. And what you see on the right corner is like a map Crypto has created, which is at his wall, with some LEDs behind it. Is some project he published some years ago, which I found pretty funny. So he does not need to look at his logs or monitor. He's just entering his room and see at his wall if there is something going on or not. Open in Firefox? Yeah, probably not. Okay. Tooling. We're coming to the end now and going to having a topic tooling. So there are some tools. We had researched this already before and took the freedom of create some tools for investigating this and other issues. And then when this VMware hack started, we thought, okay, now it's really time also to publish all those things. And one of the things was SLP scan, which was formerly called SLP or SL Punisher. Then we thought, okay, maybe SLP scan is a bit more friendly. And when this was published, this is actually a downstrip version, which does not allow you to misuse it. So there have several things have been removed. However, you can still investigate SIP and those things. Yeah. Oh yeah, and if you don't like SLP scan for what reason ever, there's also still OpenSLP software you can install on your device or maybe have and try to investigate with that. This is a simple example how you can use SLP scan. It has two modes. One mode is that you have a predefined service operation that it's a service request for version 2 and just give an IP address, and it will just ask this remote system and figures out if there's a response. Plus it has a so-called probe mode where you can add your own probes in a JSON file and then just call that with the command line to see how this reacts. So this is an example from last week, I think, with some random device in the interwebs. And here we have actually two different sorts of retypes operations. One is the classic service request, and then you also see the difference between a service request and a service type request. Then there's SLP load. SLP load supports you in figuring out how much a device can be primed. So are your devices vulnerable? And if you use this one, you just give the packet size, how much you try to load it up with, and the IP, and then it will trying to load data into step by step by step, and also gives you the amplification factor. Yeah, OpenSLP, if you want to do it by OpenSLP default tools. Besides this vulnerability, you of course can do it, use it for other things. Because, well, you can put there 1,500 bytes, so you can also store some sort of information. And you can specify lifetime, you can specify a handle. It will not be hard to base encode it, to encrypt it, or whatsoever. What's funny about this is, again, as we can spoof, we can at least for adding this information sort of anonymously. If you want to read it out, probably not. Depends on, maybe you can also do some funny reflection there. And of course, even though if UDP wouldn't be there anymore, you could still do it via TCP, which is, as I said at the beginning, SLP has been defined for TCP and UDP. However, you don't have the spoofing part normally with TCP. If the data, however, you can store with SLP is not enough, if you want to store data, you maybe can go with something like a global PJL network, which was sort of introduced already around 2000 by Finolit. Then C2 infrastructure, of course, as you can store the information, you can also abuse it for that, adding some SLP to your C2 infrastructure and have your main system there. What would be also funny is if someone is using or doing a global defense, because you don't have only the registration service, but you also have the deregistration. So what stops you from removing a service which is already there? Like, this would be also funny. So we were thinking, okay, what happens if you monitor all the devices, let's say 1 hour per day, and then if you see, okay, there's some priming ongoing, you just unprime it again. That was a funny thought. References, so as soon as I have published the slides, which might take some more days, you can also check out the references or make a photo. And questions, I'm at the end of my talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Dash, for this lovely presentation in these very warm afternoon hours. Do we have any questions from the audience?
No questions asked.
Don't be shy.
You see, even Garafel is here.
Okay. Oh, there's a question over there.
We have a question. Is it about Garafel?
No, not about Garafel. I missed a short part of your talk. I'm not sure if you answered this. Have you seen any attacks in the wild using this?
I'm not aware of yet. I have seen we have seen the preparations. We have seen preparations, but as we are not able to monitor every AS we don't know. No, I cannot tell you about this. Maybe there is, maybe if other sources tell us about it, which I haven't checked for time, we could publish something about this, about ongoing attacks, but my current answer is no. Thank you.
We have one question from the internet.
Net asks, given the age of the protocol, the strength yield of the amplification, and the large number of products and vendors, what are your thoughts on how this went unnoticed for so long?
The internet is huge. There's a lot of things going on, and the fun fact, I mean, this is almost going into a philosophical direction, because the fun thing is we only know what we can see, what we know, what we already researched, and we cannot know what we haven't researched yet. And there's a ton of things, if you check out for daily publishing, even of major and critical vulnerabilities, so the lists are endless. And if you imagine of all the things you don't know, I think this is... I think there's a lot of other things we don't know yet, or people have not published. Also, from my point of view, I doubt that we have been the first one recognizing it. And I mean, we saw it, we felt, okay, interesting. We had just been the first one saying, okay, we make this now public. Right, so I can imagine that people have seen this. I mean, we know that not every research is published.
Okay, any further questions? That does not seem to be the case, so thanks again, Dash, for this lovely talk, and thanks, Giraffe, and then have a pleasant day.